Hi, friends. My name is Chidima, also known as the Type A Hippie, and this is the Type A Hippie podcast, ChiCast episode 21. So I am really thrilled, friends, to be chatting with a new friend, and her name is Tuhina Rash. And I came across her. It's kind of funny. I've talked a lot about this on the podcast, about kind of the circus of an election cycle that we all, shall I say, suffered through. And so on the back end of things, after the election, I was processing a lot with some closed mouth friends that were safe spaces for me. And I'm on a group text with two of my dear friends. And one of them sent me Tuhina's Advent devotional. And so I'll let her introduce herself and we'll kind of jump right in into this Advent devotional. So welcome on to the Type A Hippie podcast, Tuhina. So glad you're here.
Thanks, Chidima. It's great to be here. So where do I begin? I guess I'll give a little bit of background as to who I am before jumping into the Advent devotional, because
absolutely,
I think that's a big part of it. So I am an ordained pastor in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. It is a mainline Protestant denomination in the United States. But this is where it gets a little interesting. So I am second generation Indian American. My parents immigrated from India in 1970, and I was born and raised in the United States. So I have very brown skin, and I'm very proud of it.
Love it.
I serve the whitest main, actually, I serve the whitest denomination in the United States of America.
Wow.
Like, not even mainline or, like, you know, evangelical or whatever. Like,
sure.
It is the whitest denomination in the United States of America. And how I found myself in this church, it has been a really interesting journey. But for me, there's something about Lutheran God talk, so Lutheran theology. And it's something that just really resonated in my body and in my heart and in my bones, that I just couldn't walk away from it. And so it's a very odd position to be in this church. So I am an ordained woman of color who serves a predominantly white denomination.
Sure.
And it was really hard over the past couple years, particularly with the killings of people of color by police.
Yes.
And police and law enforcement officials not being held accountable in those deaths. And that had just been something that had really, really disturbed my soul. And then, of course, the elections started happening, the primaries, and then the presidential election. And I didn't know what to do. And I have a community of friends within this church that I really trust. And they had encouraged me to write. One of the first things I ever really committed to writing about was intersectionality, the collision of all of these identities to form who we are in the world, and how everybody else's identities also form and collide, and that we live in this world of all of these identities that are just intertwined and intermixed and colliding with one another. But as the Republican primary happened, and Donald Trump won the nomination, I started to get really worried, and I started to write more about what I was really feeling deep in my bones about the fear and the apprehension of being a brown woman in America with somebody who, it almost feels like he lauds white supremacist behavior and misogyny.
Yes.
And as a woman of color, this was horrifying. And it just really bothered me. So I started to write more and more. I wrote about, there is an Indian American activist. Her name is Deepa Iyer, and she wrote a book called We Too Sing America. And I wrote a book review for Deepa, but I wrote it through the lens of Trump accepting the Republican nomination for president.
Yeah.
And how I didn't want my story to end on that note.
Sure.
And I didn't want it to end with his presidency. And then Never in my life did I think these words would come out of my mouth, but they have. When the Access Hollywood tapes were released of Trump's sexual assault of women, I mean, that's just what, I was livid because all of a sudden, like, white Republicans were starting to get upset. Like, white evangelical women were starting to get upset. And I'm like, where were y'all?
Mm-hmm.
Where were y'all? Like months ago when he was, mocking a differently abled reporter, when he was talking about Mexicans being rapists and drug dealers, and when he was talking about banning Muslims and having Muslim internment camps. And it was just kind of shocking. And that led me to write an article called The Sanctification of White Pussy. And it was really interesting because people are like, pastors aren't supposed to use those words. And part of it was really like, I was so upset that my body didn't have worth.
Right.
My anger went into those words, into that article. And during this time, I also have been participating in a grassroots movement in the Lutheran Church called Decolonize Lutheranism. And in the midst of this, we were kind of posting and retweeting articles that were leading up to a gathering in Chicago last October. And my co-conspirator, Jason Chestnut, and I, we were lamenting yet again the shooting of two black men by police officers. And this happened in September. And we were lamenting about this when we were talking about the social media schedule of things that we had to post for this event. And I sent him a poem that I had held on to when the grand jury was not indicted in Eric Garner's death in December of 2004. And it's called Rend the Heavens by Micah Murray. And one of the repetitive phrases in that poem is fuck this shit.
Mm-hmm.
God, rend the heavens, come down and fuck this shit. And Jason sends me a message back and he said, fuck this shit, an Advent devotional. And I said, yes, we're doing it. And we started contacting people that we trusted, people that we knew. We also told them that this was a risk. Like, you could potentially be risking your career. You could be risking your ministry. You could be risking your position in a church. But we feel very called to this work. And we had a diverse and amazing group of writers. We had so many people of color. We had people on the LGBTQ spectrum. And just the writing that came out of this was raw, and it was beautiful, and it was honest, and it was also heartbreaking, because the season of Advent, it's not really meant to be like, hey, it's almost Christmas.
Right.
But the season of Advent is actually looked at as this time of prophecy, of proclaiming that Christ is coming and proclaiming that Christ is coming again. And that these are words that should really move us into action for the sake of the world and for the sake of our neighbor until Christ comes again the second time. So we decided, okay, we'll do this. And we had about 16 amazing contributors lined up that said, yes, we will take this risky journey with you because we are angry, we are upset, and something has to be done.
Yeah. I love that because I too found that my voice, not only was it amplified, but I felt like this burning within me that needed to take flight or take root or both, right? There was something within me that I was like, okay, I cannot be silenced, but I cannot afford to silence myself any longer because mm-hmm. something needs to happen. And I've said this a couple times on my podcast that one of those friends that I'm on this group text with, she told me when I was still living in Las Vegas in August of 2016, she said, you should start a podcast. You have something to say. And I wept because I was like, I don't have anything to say. I mean, it's the lie, right? But I was like, I don't have anything of value to say. And I'm not just going to start a podcast just to hear myself talk because other people have done it. And then a month later, another friend said the same thing, and I didn't cry. And I said, well, that's growth. That's progress. And on Thanksgiving was when I started this podcast, and I recorded 16 episodes from Thanksgiving to New Year's Eve because
Wow.
there was something to say. And I had this, I would call it like a righteous anger, which it sounds like you and your circle had the same thing going on, where I was like, oh no. Oh no, we cannot. I mean, anyone who doesn't take stock of what's happening, we're bound to be find ourselves in the same mess again at a later time. So no, we have to do something. And I felt the same thing that it sounds like you all felt. So that's so awesome that people were willing to take the risk and do something because of the greater good and because of the spirit moving within them and that that sense of conviction.
And I think the beauty that came out of this Advent devotional. So we, my co-conspirator Jason and I, we were very intentional that while we do have writers and we have contributors that will be producing content every day of Advent. Ultimately, we also wanted to create a community that would create with us, which is why we have the hashtag. So hashtag fuck this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be followed on, it could be followed on Twitter. It could be followed on Instagram. And it could be followed on Facebook. And it was an invitation to ask people to create with us, to go into their faith story, to go into their faith journey. Where did they see the need for justice?
Mm-hmm.
Where did they need to see the need for righteous and holy anger? And so having people write, having people paint, having people draw, having people write poetry, having people write music. It was this amazing community that had come together during this time of Advent. And I think the thing that I was most amazed by through this devotional was the community that was formed out of this and
mm-hmm.
seeing people minister and take care of one another, realizing that it's hard to stay woke
right.
all the time because as honk out and fall asleep. But the realization that we all had one another's back that we could all care for one another, that we could all lift. Part of the holy work was allowing people to be righteously angry. I think as somebody who believes in the inspired word of God, which is what created the Bible, I think the Bible is filled with people being angry. And I think over the course of history, particularly in the United States with the Puritans, we have sanitized the Bible.
Yes. Thank
we
you.
Have
Thank
so
you.
Totally sanitized the Bible.
Well, people think that Jesus is this, like, just this guy that wore Jesus sandals and, you know, had long hair and just was okay with everything and accepted everything. And it's
and held a sheet for everyone. And like
totally. And it's like, no, he called out people. There was a backdrop of love for sure, but he called people out. The wolves, he called out.
Mm-hmm. He called people out. He told people the truth.
Yep.
He told the people in power that the power, this power, that it is of this earth, but it is not of God's power.
Sure.
It is not of divine power. And so when you judge people, when you criticize people, when you oppress people, you know, this is not what God wants for God's creation.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that really got to me was that Jesus called people out, but Jesus flipped over tables in a temple.
Thank you.
You know, the most, you know, one of the holy places. Jesus went in and he saw, he saw people like turning the house of God into essentially a supermarket.
Right.
People trading, like making money off of, you know, people's faith.
Yeah.
And that Jesus had turned over a table and he said, you know, you brood of vipers, no, no more.
Absolutely. Well, and that, I mean, I don't know if you follow. Do you follow John? I always
Was
butcher. Yes.
it's actually John Baptist who called people you brood of vipers, but
Right. He wrote a piece. John wrote a piece on Jesus and essentially calling out the church and saying that the very thing that you are criticizing in people who want to, how did he put it? So people like you and I that genuinely, and you know what, I can't speak to anyone's intention. I can only speak to what I see. And so if I see you going out and serving your community and calling out the things that are inherently wrong in our society, I too am, my parents emigrated from Nigeria about 40 something years ago as well. And if I say, I was just texting with a friend because President Obama is giving his final address right now, and I sent the crying emoji, like it's his final address, and then we get the one that's coming next, and I'm like, I mean, the differences are not lost on me and on many people. And so as we're, I forget, where was I going with this? I was going somewhere. Oh yeah, so this guy John Pavlovitz, he was talking about how so many people, like in the, especially the evangelical church, and white churchgoers that are saying, oh, you need to be more like Jesus. Like if I speak up, right, and I say, no, this is unacceptable. I accept it, but it's unacceptable to me, and this is what I'm planning on doing about it. I need to be more like Jesus. And so I was texting with a dear girlfriend of mine that, so I just moved back to Michigan about 4 months ago, and I lived in Las Vegas for a long time, and that's actually where I found my faith again, of all places. And so I was texting with one of my friends there, and I said, you know, what's interesting to me is that if I say this is a problem and I speak up and I stand up about it, there are people even in my community, that will say something, maybe not to me, but to someone like me, a woman of color, whose parents were they're naturalized citizens, and I'm grateful for that, especially with the new administration that's coming in. They'll say, well, you need to go back to Africa. Well, I'll go back if you start. You go back to where you came from because I was born here, this is my country as well. And what I've learned from my parents, along with different faith communities and spiritual communities in which I've been a part for the last, I mean, I don't know how many years, when there's a problem, you get to roll up your sleeves and come up with a solution. At least be part of the solution. Because if I'm not being a part of the solution, right, then I'm perpetuating the problem. And part of it, I just read one of your pieces with the hashtag, what is it? It was
Oh, decolonized Lutheranism.
decolonize Lutheranism about the decentralization of power, which is one thing that you were touching on with this Advent calendar, is let's take a look at that. And then you started to speak more about it at this event that you did, I think, in Carefree, Arizona. And just how looking at, I mean, I work for the, I have a couple jobs amongst other things that I have going on right now. And one of the things I was talking about with the VP of the university is that when I was an undergrad at the University of Michigan, we wore T-shirts, a lot of black students that said "Black at Michigan," because there were white students that didn't think that we belonged there. And I'm from Ann Arbor. Median income is 100,000. My parents are both very educated. I had everything that I needed, I got everything that I wanted, a lot of what I wanted, I got. Not everything, but a lot, And so I was put on a path of success as well, even though there were microaggressions and, racism, institutional racism that I've encountered over my life. And so it's interesting to me just that sometimes people, they don't even recognize what they have. I wrote a piece on, I called it Podium of Privilege, what they have in privilege and what that actually means. And sometimes people get the wrong idea. They think that anyone that's calling it out is indicating that it's someone's fault that they were born into that. And that's not what the conversation is. You're missing the point entirely. It's not about whose fault it is. It's about what is happening now. Like, are you planning on stepping up to that podium of privilege to speak out against something or amplify someone's voice? Or are you going to just bask in the glory of your privilege and keep it moving, right? We all have choices.
That we do. That we certainly do. And I think the choices that we could make, and I think for me, this is leading to what led to the Advent devotional, is that I think being a prophet, I'm not calling myself a prophet, but I think we had so many prophetic voices for Fuck This Shit, for the Advent devotional, that we're speaking truth into the world. And I think we don't listen to our prophets anymore, and even realizing that even in the Bible, the prophets weren't even listened to.
Right.
And that prophets led very short lives.
Yep.
Which is not great. But at that same time, it's this, you know, this cry in the wilderness of calling systems into accountability, of calling out what is happening in the world today. And I think that's also one of the biggest reasons why I'm part of this movement called Decolonize Lutheranism, is that it's calling out these institutions as church, that if we're really going to talk about being church in the world, we can't just talk about power. We can't just talk about, like, hey, we're diverse because we have X, Y, and Z people here.
Right.
But do you honor their stories? Do you let them speak, or do you just talk over them and say, hey, we have somebody here, we've done our job today?
That's right.
And so for me, that's why it's such an interesting position to be a woman of color in this denomination. And one of the things that I have told myself is that if I am invited to speak anywhere, if I'm invited to go anywhere, I will go with the entirety of who God created me to be. And part of that is my voice. And part of that is how I speak and the words that I use. And I think there are times where there are things that I have said, there are things that I have written that make people feel uncomfortable. But at that same time, I think it's like, are we willing to tell ourselves the truth? Because if we are fully honest in the truth that is in this world today, all of us are uncomfortable. I mean, my God, I'm even uncomfortable with the truth that I know that there are times where I stumble and I falter and I have the truth told to me, but what are you willing to do with that truth?
Absolutely. That's so true.
And I think for me, it's something that I want to wrestle with. I want to love and care for my neighbor in the best way that I can, and in the way that honors who God created them to be in their wholeness and their entirety.
Yeah. Well, I love that wrestling that you talk about, because I'm a visual learner. And so I often speak in visualizations myself. And one of the things for me personally was when Orlando happened, right? And so for me, I realized that I hadn't been utilizing, I don't necessarily have all the privileges. I do have at least a few. And so I hadn't been utilizing that to the best, because the privilege is not for me to enjoy. It's for me to be a part of community. And I can't say that I care about you if what concerns you doesn't concern me as well. And so it broke my heart, and it broke me wide open in terms of, okay, what are you using your voice for, and what are you doing to change? You know, what are you doing personally to change, but what are you doing to help change and be the change that you wish to see in the world? What exactly is happening there? When I was reading your piece, I love this. I sent a couple paragraphs to my friends. And then I said, Damn it. Like, let me just send this whole damn article. So I'm not just, because in the end it would have been that, right? Like I would have sent every single paragraph that you sent, and it's like, okay, we'll just send the entire link. So one thing is under power, you said, in order to honestly address these questions, some previous questions that had come up in the article, we have to be open and honest. We need to have, excuse me, we have to have open and honest conversations about power and what it means to decentralize that power. So this was like a highlight for me. It's one thing to invite voices to the table. It is an entirely different practice to physically, psychologically, and spiritually move the table to the margins and out of the normative comfort zones of where theology is usually taught, and to give marginalized voices precedent to speak where they have normally been silenced, objectified, or talked over. We have to look one another in the eye and be uncomfortable if we are to do the work of Jesus followers, be in the work of accompaniment, and actually travel to the margins and listen to people who reside there. And then you go on to say, we have to live out and embody Isaiah 40, 4 and 5. Every valley shall be lifted up and every mountain and hill be made low. The uneven ground shall become level and the rough places a plain. Then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed and all people shall see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. And that just painted such a picture in my mind. I was reading a podcast of one of those two friends. They have a podcast as well. And they were talking about, unless love is served at the table needs to be burned, you know? And I like this idea too of we need to just keep making it like the table needs to physically be moved, you know, and spiritually and psychologically so that it touches the margins of where people have been pushed out and pushed out of the conversation. And yeah, like, I mean, because if I think about if I am you and you are me and there are no others and there's no us versus them, you know, the conversation does look different, right? Like we start to have a different dialogue than when I'm holding fast to my position and you're holding fast to your position. And it's almost as if God is an afterthought. Like we've just totally forgotten that there is a divine, you know, that there's a spirit that is within each of us and that's moving. Because I'm just, no, I'm right. No, I'm right. That sort of thing. And nothing really gets accomplished by that. So I really do like the point of the Advent, or like how it came to be, because it's like enough. Enough is enough. Like when will this be enough? You know? I have three brothers. I have two little nephews. They're biracial, and yet the world will see them one way, likely when they grow up, you know? And it's like, I mean, it's just mind-blowing and mind-boggling what has transpired over the last several four, I would say 4 or 5 years, because it's been an ongoing onslaught. And so don't even get me started on, I was gonna go down the path of pro-life, because I was like,
Oh, Lordy Lou. Yeah.
I can't. Right? Like, what pro-life?
I think if we're talking about the same thing of, yeah.
Well, you
Yeah.
know, yeah, because pro-life means pro-life. So if unarmed black men and women, some are dying in the middle of the street, is that really pro-life? So we can just let that hang in the air.
Yeah.
So anyway, so tell us a little bit more about the decolonized Lutheranism. I kind of jumped into that.
Okay, well, decolonize Lutheranism. I think there's this whole aspect of it that I think how it came to be, I think, is a very like Holy Spirit led enterprise. I think enterprise is the wrong word, but that's the only word I can think of right now. I think a big part of it is that I think the breaking point for a lot of people of color in the ELCA were the shootings at Mother Emanuel in Charleston in June of 2015. I think that was the breaking point for so many people of color. Not, I think and particularly in the church, because I think churches are supposed to be sanctuaries.
Right.
Churches are supposed to be places where you commune with God, where you reside with your siblings in Christ, where you serve your beloveds in Christ. Church is supposed to be that safe space.
Right.
And I think that safe space, not only was it violated, but it was violated in the worst way, with a black church being violated by a violent white supremacist.
Right.
That is like the most violent thing I could think of, and it happened. And it was also immensely heartbreaking that the shooter was confirmed in one of the churches in the denomination in which I serve.
Wow.
So Dylan Roof was confirmed in one of the churches in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And to be a woman of color in this church was realizing that, what is my role here now? What are we supposed to do? I think there were so many of us that were just shocked.
Sure.
I think so many of us that were horrified. I think there were so many of us that were appalled. And I think that was the breaking point where I think people of color had just said, no more, no more. We're going to speak for our, we're going to speak up, and we're going to speak out against these systems of whiteness, against systems of oppression. And it was really interesting how decolonized Lutheranism came about, because it really came about through social media, memes. It came about through a couple of memes that had started, and that other people started making memes about challenging the norms of what it meant to be a Lutheran in the United States.
Yeah.
And then it kind of started to, I think it was just kind of like this point in time where this community came together of, we can be that diverse church that is mentioned in the book of Revelation, where everybody has a place,
right,
where everything will be made new again. And I think that that is the church that we are striving for, that is not held to Western European cultural norms, but that can hold everybody's identity of who God created everybody to be in their wholeness, in their fullness, in their entirety. And that there is a place for everybody in this wholeness and entirety of who God created them to be in the church. And this is what our movement is trying to communicate, that there is a place in there is a place for us in the church. The church just needs to see that.
Right. I love that.
Well, and we had a gathering in Chicago, where we actually ended up having to shut down registration before the event because it was full.
Wow.
So we had over 200 people attend this conference in Chicago, talking about, what does it mean to decolonize Lutheranism? What does it mean to start talking about shifting power and decentralizing power? What does it mean to have representation of the fullness of God's diversity in church? And what happens to us when we don't see or experience that diversity? What happens when people are not at the table, or if people are not invited to the table, or if people don't even know the table is there?
Right. That's a big one.
Right. And so it's a movement that is really taking a look at, what is it to be church? What is it to be church today in this increasingly diverse country that is the United States, but at the same time is still bound by this history of whiteness and white supremacy?
Mm-hmm.
And what is that going to mean?
Yeah. All great questions, and definitely ones that are the gifts that keep on giving when you think about it. Because I was talking to one of my friends today, and she was talking about this idea of, many Christians do not challenge the idea of original sin, that as a result of Adam and Eve, that we all were born with this sin. That wasn't necessarily our fault, but it just is. That's the need for a savior. Yet the same people balk at the idea of this idea of privilege, like white privilege in particular. And it gets turned into, well, I, you know, all about me, when the idea is very similar in terms of that is just one thing that's happened. Now, what are you going to do about it? Just like original sin, it's still the same thing. You know, they're very similar concepts. And I think it's interesting that when it comes to certain things, for example, race, and really I prefer color because I believe I'm a part of the human race, but this delineation of color and what that actually means in this culture, because it means something different in other places of the world, that people are less willing to have a conversation about it. Not all people, but many people are less willing to have a conversation about this because they start to get their feelings hurt, and fragility is a real thing, and just this desire to not talk about it as if that will just be the reason that it goes away and it becomes non-existent, which is has proven to not be the case at all.
And it's so hard to talk about in general and sometimes in the church, I think, because I think people get really defensive. Particularly when you start talking about a person's actual formed identity.
Yes.
And who they are in their flesh and in their bone. And I think those conversations become very personal and they become very uncomfortable, particularly, you know, talking about issues of race and racism within the United States. Because I think at this time, like I use the term race because I think it's a false social construct.
Absolutely.
It's a totally false social construct to essentially have one race be above every other.
Right.
But at that same time, I try to purposely use those words that make people feel uneasy because I think we have to say them out loud.
Yeah.
We have to confront them because if we don't tell ourselves our truths, then we're going to be living in fantasy land. And I think that's why I'm so apprehensive. I'm using the word apprehensive actually very loosely. I'm actually very terrified of the upcoming administration because this is an administration that cannot seem to speak a single word of truth
at all.
And that we seem to be entering into this twisted fantasy land of where all of this horrible behavior is going to become excusable.
You know what I feel? I sometimes feel like it's an alternate reality and that if I don't laugh about some of the absurdities that I'll cry. Mm-hmm. I guess there's nothing really wrong with crying per se. And I totally agree with you is that I don't know where we're going. And that is terrifying. And to your point about using the word race, I too use it because at least there's an understanding behind it. People know what we mean when we bring up race and gender and, you know, sexual identity or sexual orientation or the spectrum of sexuality, right, or fluidity amongst other identities, I guess. So there is a common even if we don't know exactly what we're speaking of, that people can generally wrap their minds around what that means in context. So it is important as we are having these difficult conversations to have some of these terms defined and to have some common information, even though many people don't come to the table with, and they have to do their own homework if they're willing to do the hard work, right? And to look at the truth, because you mentioned it, I've mentioned it. I don't always get it right. You know, inevitably I will get some of this wrong, and I will hurt someone's feelings, or I will say something without thinking it all the way through, or I'll say something and I've thought it through and it is hurtful and not in the intention of what, you know, what I intended and what actually happened are two totally different things. So bridging that gap and closing it up and doing the next right thing for me, it could be an apology and amends, that sort of thing. And that's all good, you know, as long as we are moving forward and willing to do the difficult work.
And do that difficult work and not on the backs of others.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I think that's one of the biggest things that I have been learning. And that also came about through the Advent devotional, was that we still have so much to learn about how we are to one another in the world.
Yes.
And I know that I have inadvertently hurt people that I love dearly. And the realization of, you know, I myself still have so much work to do. I still have so much that I need to learn in order to honor the entirety of who people are.
Right. It's so true. Yeah. I got myself into trouble once because, and I don't know, I suggested, I had tagged some people in an article that I didn't love the title, to be honest. But I did it because they all seemed to be allies. And so one of the four people wasn't happy about that. And so in an effort to reconcile, and it was legit. I mean, it was coming from my heart. You know, I did apologize. And one of the suggestions of the writer of the article was for people, white people, to read more books written by people of color, LGBTQI, you know, different marginalized groups, in an effort to educate themselves, because asking someone from one of those groups will help me understand. They're not obliged to, A. B, you do some work, please, you know. You're an adult now. You can learn something. Pick up a book or several, you know. Have a seat, get comfortable, and do the damn thing is kind of the way I look at it. I don't want to answer any questions. I'm off duty right now, you know. Like, I'm living my life right now. So I totally agree with that. So I could speak with you for a really long time. And at the same time, I think we may have to say goodbye until next, or say see you later. We'll talk soon, right?
That we'll do this again.
Yes, we'll definitely do this again. So thank you so, so much for taking time. Tuhina is going on very various journeys. God is taking her all over. And so she was able to squeeze time with me tonight, which I'm really, really grateful for, because it's been very enlightening. And you've given me, myself, some food for thought. And I believe our listeners some food for thought. So thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me.
Oh, it is my pleasure. So as what is usual, friends, we're going to read a couple stories, or I'll read a couple stories to y'all from Humans of New York stories, and then we'll close out in the usual manner. So there's a young person, appears to be a young woman. I turned out okay because of the people in foster care who didn't go anywhere when I tried to push them away. She's asked, anyone in particular? There were a lot, but there was a counselor at one of my group homes named Janelle Bogue. And when I woke up crying at 3 a.m. because I felt like nobody loved me, she would sit with me and tell me that she cared about me, and she wasn't going anywhere. And she told me that God cared about me and that God wasn't going anywhere. Then there is a little girl, and she seems to be in a subway, and it just says today in micro fashion, and she's wearing a little plush furry jacket with white hearts all over it. And then the last question, or the last story we'll do is, there's a woman who she has like a bundle of, it looks like a huge hat with butterflies all over it. And she said, I have a neck injury, so I had to tone it down this year. So I guess she used to have a way bigger hat, but now it's actually smaller. And then we'll do one more. He proposed to me in a cemetery. And then he said, well, it sounds bad when you say it that way. It was a scenic cemetery, more of a lookout point, really. And there were all these neat headstones. It was her idea to go there anyway. So, I honor the place within you where the entire universe resides. I honor the place within you of love, of light, of truth, of peace. I honor the place within you where when you are in that place in you and I am in that place in me, there is only one of us. So have a blessed rest of your day, friends. I hope to see you soon or hear from you soon. My name is Chidima, the Type A hippie. Namaste.